Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's show, we'll hear from a Boulder-based company that helps provide small solar installations to communities in sub-Saharan Africa. This week, they won an award for their efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Then we'll have a listener commentary, followed by the latest Trends Diary, hearing how people in the community are faring during the coronavirus pandemic. At 8:30, Roger Wendell is your host for Connections. Today, his guest is Nate Menninger. He'll speak about his documentary film, The Porter, which chronicles his experience as the first white porter in the Everest region. It also chronicles the injustices that Sherpas must endure. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. On Thursday, Governor Jared Polis said he was confident that it is reasonably safe to reopen schools in the coming weeks.
Well, yeah, I think all the work that Coloradans have put in to keep our viral transmission rate low is why it's safer to open schools in Colorado. It is reasonably safe. Many schools are opening. Some are opening with full 5-day schedules. Some districts are doing 2-day schedules. There are districts that, for their own reasons, are delaying the decision and they're beginning out virtually. But yeah, I think the hard work of Coloradans is what has led to an environment where, unlike parts of Texas, much of Florida, it's reasonably safe to open schools. And just as it's reasonably safe to go to the grocery store, it's reasonably safe to go to work. That reflects a lot of sacrifices that Coloradans have made to make schools a safe place to be. And I know that many kids are going to be going back in the coming weeks, including my own.
The governor's comments came as the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment released guidelines on Thursday for school districts. The guidance provides specific steps that a school should take in response to cases and outbreaks of the coronavirus. It also outlines when classrooms, cohorts and schools should close. The health department says that a classroom or cohort should be closed for 14 days when there is a single student, teacher or other staff member with a confirmed or probable case of COVID-19. It also says an entire school should close for 14 days when there are 5 or more classroom outbreaks or 5% of unrelated people with confirmed cases. The health department identifies an outbreak when 2 or more unrelated people in a single classroom or cohort have confirmed cases of COVID-19. Colorado will declare racism to be a public health crisis. The Denver Post reports that this comes after a push by staffers inside the state's health department to respond to ongoing social justice protests and the inequities highlighted by the coronavirus pandemic. Staffers have expressed frustration that CDPHE Executive Director Jill Hunsicker Ryan has not made such a public declaration sooner. The American Public Health Association has already declared racism to be a public health crisis. Now the state health department will make it a formal policy. Hunsicker Ryan says she's got 2 goals. 1, to increase diversity in the department's workforce. It's almost 78% white. She also wants to make it easier for local community organizations that provide services to people of color to partner with the agency. She says she wants to hire an equity and inclusion officer for the department, and she hopes to do so by the end of August. Minority-owned businesses in Longmont will get some funding to help them through the pandemic. Steve Miller has more.
The Longmont Community Foundation is looking for minority small business owners to apply for a grant called Strongmont 2. The funds are designated for business owners of color who have experienced hardship during the pandemic. Business owners who are Asian, African American, Hispanic, Latino, Middle Eastern, Native American, or Pacific Islander are encouraged to apply. Alejandro Rodriguez and Edward Perea have applied for the grant. They opened Summit Tacos in 2017 as a food truck, and that success allowed them to open up a restaurant last year. Rodriguez said because of the coronavirus pandemic, their business has faced many challenges, and if they are awarded the Strongmont 2 grant, he will use the money towards utilities, payroll, and everyday operation costs. The Strongmont 2 grant application is available on the foundation's website and is offered in both English and Spanish. Applicants may ask for up to $10,000. The deadline to submit the application is next Monday, August 3rd. The money was raised through private donors and resident contributions. People can donate to Strongmont 2 on the Longmont Community Foundation's website. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Highs today in the mid-80s with a chance of afternoon thunderstorms. You're listening to The Morning Magazine here on KGNU. The Keeling Curve Prizes were awarded this week. They recognise organisations around the world that are working to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. One of the winners is a company from Boulder. Emily McAteer is CEO and co-founder of Odyssey Solutions, a Boulder-based organisation that mainly works in sub-Saharan Africa to help communities get access to solar energy.
There's about 1 billion people in this world that don't have access to reliable electricity. And one of the best ways to electrify these communities, these businesses, is to put small-scale solar projects in their communities. And this is a very new paradigm. It's a new way of electrifying rural areas of the world that don't yet have access to power. And so it's a very hard challenge in terms of how do you finance these small-scale projects that are in, you know, very difficult, hard-to-reach parts of the world. And so we have built a platform essentially to help get those projects up and running.
So I think people would be familiar with when we think about energy generation and energy distribution, it's often, a centralized system. You might have a big power station that then gets sent out through various different ways to surrounding communities. What you're talking about almost sounds like the solar garden approach that we've certainly discussed here in Colorado, where communities would just have their own source of electricity through the solar panels. So you don't need to have all of that infrastructure. Is that a correct assessment?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So the way that developed countries electrified rural areas was to build centralized energy systems, you know, a big power plant, a coal-fired power plant, and then a distribution network with, you know, cables and wires out from that central system to rural areas. What's really exciting now is the cost of solar has come down so much that it's actually cheapest and most efficient, rather than to have that centralized network, to just build an on-site small solar system that only powers that one community or maybe a couple of neighboring communities. But it's distributed, so it's not connected to anything else. It's a small solar plant in that community. It goes to every household and provides the same level of reliable power. Actually, in a lot of the markets where we work, much more reliable power than the traditional grid network would.
Well, if you are working mostly in sub-Saharan Africa, I would imagine the abundance of sunshine would make it a more reliable source.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's high solar potential in a lot of the places that we work. And one thing that's really interesting is that this concept is not totally new. In a lot of the markets that we work, a lot of people are generating power on site, but they're doing it with diesel generators. And so very fossil fuel heavy, dirty sources of energy. And so what we're able to do is help them replace those sources of energy with clean technologies.
So what are the barriers that you're finding to have this maybe rolled out in a very wide, broad scale?
Yeah, it's similar to what I was saying earlier. It's a very new paradigm for how you electrify billions of people or hundreds of millions of people. Typically, these projects, you know, an energy project goes through a typical project finance structure, right? You do diligence on the project for months or years. You put a ton of money into that, and then it's a very expensive project. The challenge that we're trying to solve is how do you put hundreds of millions of dollars to work to communities, but have that money go into hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands small projects? And then how do you bundle those into a portfolio that you can manage, that you can understand how it's performing, you can make sure that, you know, it's doing its job in terms of providing access to electricity? That's a new problem that we're trying to solve. And one thing that's making it all a little bit easier is the introduction of smart technologies. So we can actually plug into an operating small solar plant in a rural area in Nigeria, and we can see how an individual customer is using power, or how a community is using power. We can see how the system is performing and whether or not it's reliably been on for, you know, all hours of the day. And so these smart technologies are making it much easier to use data to understand how a portfolio of projects are operating.
So in terms of the work that you're doing at Odyssey, I mean, there's so many components in what you're doing, from engineering to, you know, almost developmental work to then investment. I mean, what's the main component of what the work that Odyssey is doing?
I think if you had to boil it down to one thing, it's data management. And so we manage data across the entire life cycle of it, of one of these projects or our portfolio of these solar projects. So we're managing data from the early days when you're out in a community trying to figure out whether or not a solar microgrid makes sense, all the way through to you've got a portfolio of, you know, 100 of these operating and you need to understand how that portfolio is doing.
And that data is really crucial, as you said, to understanding what's effective, what needs to happen and where it needs to happen.
Exactly, because you can't send folks out to all of these rural communities and figure it out from, you know, being on the ground and checking out the system yourself. You need a way to see it remotely.
And in terms of the electrification then of these communities, I mean, that must just open the door for so many other things, from water and sanitation as well, because, of course, the pumps rely on electricity. And so really, it seems that electricity and power generation is the hub for so many of the other issues that are often facing these communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that's talked a lot about in our sector is this concept of productive uses. So once you bring electricity into a community, what other types of equipment and appliances can households and businesses start to use to generate income? So we see, for example, grain mills that now can attach to the solar microgrid and start to bring income into the community via these new types of economic activities.
Now, of course, the Keeling Curve Prize that you've just been awarded, so congratulations on that. That's really about efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And so there are so many different components to what you're doing. Of course, it's the electrification and the empowerment, and literally and figuratively, of these communities. But you're doing it in a way that's not dependent on fossil fuels, where so much of the electrification in that part of the world is very fossil fuel dependent. So is there a way to quantify, given that you're very much about data, is there a way to quantify how much carbon is being saved as a result of these microgrids and the solar panels?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we mitigate climate impacts in two ways. One is direct replacement of diesel fuel. And so when we were putting together our application for the Keeling Curve Prize, we estimated, okay, if an average household would use this much diesel fuel for their diesel generator and this much kerosene to light, you know, lights in their house, how much of that can we replace with solar energy? And we bundled that up. But in my mind, that's just a fraction of the climate change impact that we're having, because what we're really doing is facilitating an entirely new way for these countries to develop and to electrify their rural areas, and putting them on a path that is not fossil fuel dependent and is quite different from the path that, you know, the United States took, for example.
Is there a way for us here in the US or in developed, so-called developed countries, to use this technology as well? Because we're also dealing with an electrification system, power generation, that's heavily dependent on fossil fuels, that's very centralized. And there are a lot of legislative barriers around even solar gardens. That was a big issue here in Colorado, the policies that need to be implemented to even allow this to happen. It seems that this, as we're talking about sustainability and moving into a carbon-free future, that we need to consider these technologies that organizations like yours are working with in other countries. What about here in the US?
No, absolutely. Solar microgrids are certainly not only a developing country technology approach. The solar microgrid market is also taking off in the US and other developed countries. We just happen to focus on emerging markets for our business.
That's Emily McAteer, CEO and co-founder of Odyssey Solutions, a Boulder-based organization that works around the world, but mainly in sub-Saharan Africa, helping communities with solar microgrids. This week, Odyssey won the Keeling Curve Prize, an annual award that recognizes organizations that are working to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Next, we have listener commentary from Michelle Swenson. She produces the Truth Seekers Health Justice podcast as a member of Denver Open Media. The former nurse and author of the 2005 book Democracy Under Assault, Theopolitics, Incivility and Violence on the Right brings us this commentary.
More than four decades of neoliberal economic policy has transferred wealth upward and flattened workers' wages. Former Goldman Sachs managing director Noemi Prince notes that so far the bulk of COVID-19 bailout funds have gone to big banks and large corporations, outstripping recovery funds for working people by a ratio of 3.5 to 1. While some European governments are paying workers about 80% of their salaries, thus avoiding mass layoffs and bankruptcies, Americans are struggling to obtain unemployment benefits, with many facing permanent job loss. The U.S. needs to realign our moral, social, and economic priorities to be responsive to the people, instead of serving the corporate lobbyists who buy our elections and our Congress members. We have the resources to prioritize people's needs. Our leaders need the political will. The recently organized Movement for a People's Party is promoting a people's stimulus. The COVID-19 pandemic has magnified the need for a minimum floor of protections for people. Therefore, six demands of the people's stimulus are: 1. Defund excessive police budgets and divert funds to social services. 2. Medicare for all. 3. Monthly $2,000 cash payments for all, a basic minimum income. 4. Cover payroll to protect small business jobs. 5. Suspend rent and mortgage payments. 6. Suspend debt payments, including student loans and credit card loans. Some of these measures have been introduced in Congress. Even if we cannot visit with legislators, we can call, write, or email. A single toll-free Capitol switchboard number can access all Congress members, 866-338-1015. This is Michelle Swenson.
There was a listener commentary from Michelle Swenson. She produces the Truth Seekers Health Justice podcast as a member of the Denver Open Media Collective. Time now for Trends Diary.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Ha llegado la hora para el diario Trends, donde los residentes del condado de Boulder de todas las edades comparten experiencias personales relacionadas a necesidades comunitarias urgentes. El enfoque por ahora es la necesidad que compartimos de estar conectados y solucionar problemas a pesar del aislamiento que estamos experimentando durante la pandemia de COVID-19. Este proyecto se presenta en colaboración con la Fundación para la Comunidad del Condado de Boulder.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Adriana Paola Palacios Luna, and this is my story, a recipe and poems in Spanish for healing. My life changed due to the pandemic. Even though I'm accustomed to work in solitude because of my profession, researching, creating, and writing, I'm also a volunteer for different organizations and community projects where I have direct contact with the public. I miss that dearly. I facilitate art, cultural identity, and gender violence prevention workshops. It is not the same staying home writing for myself than staying at home with mandatory isolation. At the beginning of the COVID outbreak, I realized that I won't be able to volunteer any longer and that I had to do something to support my community. My biggest concern were public health and my income, because I'm a single mom of three kids, and all the workshops that I facilitate were canceled. To contribute to the health of the community, I made a video in Spanish on my YouTube channel, Luna Cultura, on how to produce elderberry syrup to boost our immune system. I also thought about how exhausting it is for moms to learn how to use computer along with their kids and try to keep them entertained at the same time. So I post a video of my own Spanish poetry for kids so family could relate to one another during this crisis because we are all going through the same situation. I plan to post my poems once a week because there is always a need to feel connected. I see that there are many resources for this crisis in other languages. That is why, as a cultural broker, I want to ensure as many resources as possible are available to the Spanish-speaking community. During these times, I want my poetry to inspire children to reinforce the values of creativity, solidarity, culture, emotional self-regulation, and protection of our Mother Earth. I recently started doing some textile art. My project is called To Preserve and to Transform, a Collective Idea Project. What I asked to the community was to describe what would they like to change when this pandemic is over and what will they like to preserve when this pandemic is over. You can find my textile art in my website, Luna Cultura, and also you can find all my videos and poetry in my YouTube channel, Luna Cultura. Querido Diario Trends, mi nombre es Adriana Paola Palacios Luna y esta es mi historia. Mi vida cambió bastante con la pandemia. A pesar de que estoy acostumbrada al trabajo en solitario debido a mi profesión, investigando, creando arte y escribiendo, también soy voluntaria en diferentes organizaciones y proyectos comunitarios donde tengo un trato directo con las personas. Eso lo extraño mucho. Hacemos talleres de arte, cultura e identidad y prevención de la violencia de género. No es lo mismo estar sola escribiendo para mí misma que estar en contacto con la gente. Cuando empezó la pandemia, lo primero que pensé fue que ya no iba a poder ser voluntaria y que tenía que hacer algo para apoyar a la comunidad. Mi mayor preocupación fue la salud y mi economía, porque soy madre soltera de 3 hijos y se cancelaron los talleres que me generaban ingresos. Así que para contribuir con la salud de mi comunidad, publiqué un video en español en mi canal de YouTube, Luna Cultura, con la receta del jarabe de saúco para elevar nuestro sistema inmunológico. También pensé que todas las mamás que están aprendiendo a usar las computadoras junto con sus hijos, tratando de entretenerlos, resulta algo agotador. Así que publiqué mis propios poemas para niños en español, con los que las familias pudieran identificarse, pues estamos pasando por la misma situación. Tengo planeado publicar poemas una vez por semana, pues siempre existe esa necesidad de hacer comunidad, sin importar cómo se haga. Veo que hay muchos recursos en todos los idiomas, por eso, como gestora cultural, quiero contribuir a poner más recursos al alcance de la comunidad Latinx. Y lo de los poemas fue porque en esta época quiero promover en los niños los valores de la creatividad, la solidaridad, la cultura, el manejo de emociones y el cuidado de la madre tierra. He iniciado un proyecto de arte textil en donde invité a la comunidad a participar con ideas sobre 2 preguntas. El proyecto se llama Para Preservar y para Transformar, un proyecto de inspiración colectiva. Y lo que la gente me tenía que responder era qué es lo que querían preservar una vez que concluyera o que concluya la pandemia y qué es lo que queremos transformar una vez que concluya la pandemia. Entonces he recibido algunas respuestas de la comunidad y con eso pues he hecho estos pequeños telares que tratan de simbolizar la resiliencia, el amor, la paciencia, bueno, una serie de valores que se construyen en comunidad y bueno, que espero eventualmente poder exhibir en algún sitio público. Estos telares se pueden encontrar en mi sitio de internet, Luna Cultura, y todos los videos se pueden encontrar en el canal de YouTube, también Luna Cultura. Ahora voy a compartir un poema de mi autoría. Caminitos de ensueño. Vamos amigos, hoy comienza la aventura. Podría decir que la luna y el sol son una ternura. De ensueño la vida, de ensueño el amor. Yo todos los días tejo nubes y alegrías. Un manto de enredaderas cuelga desde el cielo. La montaña orgullosa se aferra a los árboles que la sostienen. Una nueva mañana llenita de ganas, tortugas muy sabias, lentas avanzan.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
¿Es esto inspirador? ¿Tiene su propia historia de crear conexiones o solucionar problemas durante estos tiempos de aislamiento físico? Visite www.commfound.org. Busque el diario Trends y comparta su experiencia con la Fundación para la Comunidad del Condado de Boulder. Su historia podría ser transmitida en las ondas sonoras de KGNU.